on America Can We Talk, I talk about election integrity, border security, healthcare freedom, race relations, energy and tax policy, education policy, free speech and assembly, freedom of religion, and all other issues that touch on the God-given right of every American to life, liberty, and the pursuit of their version of happiness. Stay tuned. You preach your tolerance, but lecture me. Is there no end to your own hypocrisy? Your God is power, you have no shame. Your only interest is political gain. You hide your eyes and refuse to listen. You play your game.
Coming up next, America Can We Talk with your host, Debbie Georgiatos.
And hello and welcome to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiatos, and thank you so much for tuning in on a Thursday. Love my Thursday shows. I'm going to run through my Thursday quick top of the show items, and then we'll turn to our wonderful guest who's in studio today. My top of the show items, I want to remind everyone, number one, if you're listening to this show on iTunes or any other place where you're not watching live, you can always go back and watch this show at my website, AmericaCanWeTalk.org. I urge you to go there. You can read, hear past interviews, all our blog posts, everything's there, AmericaCanWeTalk.org. Also, our Rumble channel is a place to watch it as well. And if you care to, you can go through the past interviews, and I think I'm going to mention some of them today. I also want to thank Real News PR. This show is done at Real News PR, or this segment, I guess, is Real News Communication Networks. Thank Emilio, my producer, who is just wonderful and just jumps on whatever I need all the time. Also want to thank Brighteon TV, which is a place, it's the actual website is Brighteon.tv, and Brighteon.tv carries all sorts of shows that are not on. There are shows like mine that are video and audio, and they're not on major networks. Lots of great, great thinkers there. Anne Vandersteel, a whole bunch of other people I could mention. And I would urge you to go there, check it out. I also want to thank Krista Branch. Okay, that song that is my show theme, I Am America, Krista Branch's husband wrote when they were supporting Herman Cain for president. She's a fabulous singer. He's a writer. He wrote lyrics and the music, and she sings I Am America. That's been my theme music for ever since the show got going. And actually, as a funny thing, we heard it at some event. I was speaking when she was doing the kickoff music thing. My husband's in the back of the room and texted me, "You've got to get this song." And so I did. I asked her, and she said, "Absolutely, just mention my name." So Krista Branch. And the last thing I want, which I really appreciate, last thing very quick is an introductory thing. I've mentioned to you on the show several times, I'm running in the state of Texas. I'm running for RNC committee woman. And I get the question all the time, what in the world is that? All that is, the RNC. We have a chair of the RNC named Ronna McDaniel. You probably know that name. The RNC is made up of a committee man, a committee woman, and the state party chair of the GOP. And those three people together represent the state. I'm running for RNC committee woman, and the campaign is going great. We've been doing fewer shows because we've been traveling quite a bit all over Texas. I do want to share something very exciting, which is we just got the endorsement of Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk's group. Yeah, it's really great. Yeah. And I think Emilio has that happy little slide they made. If we see, there you go, Turning Point there. So I just thought you would enjoy seeing that. So I'm very grateful for that, very exciting. And I'm going to go out and meet with those people this coming week and talk about their agenda. They are really on board to just bring energy and passion to the conservative movement. So now I'll turn to my wonderful guest. We have a guest in studio whom I've known for many years. His name is Mark Davis. And if you are, well, certainly anywhere in Texas, and actually anywhere in America, you very likely have heard his talk show. He has been a long-standing and just very popular talk show host. His show, he has a name you can name the show after, the Mark Davis Show, unlike the, you can't say Debbie Georgiatis Show, so that's why I have a different name, but he's had the Mark Davis Show. It is live here in Texas on 660 AM, The Answer. He's also guest-hosted on many, many shows I could mention, but I'm going to move on. A couple other things I want to mention about him. Because in addition to being a talk show host, very popular, three-hour morning drive, when we moved to Texas, I mean, you like to have someone to listen to in the morning, long drives, and he just engaging on top of the issues all the time. He has 40 years of hosting experience, most in Texas. He's actually a journalism graduate from the University of Maryland, moved around a little bit. And I'm going to talk about the fact you came back to Texas in 1994.
Up on 30 years, yes, ma'am.
Okay, I have to tell you something amazing. We moved here in the year 2000, mm-hmm. and I thought you like had always been here. Like you were a permanent fixture. You're only 6 years, anyway. So he, but in addition to those things, he writes columns and is just a great advocate on conservative issues. And the other thing I'll mention he does, in addition to talk show and writing, is that he does a lot of volunteer things in the community that I find very commendable. One of them is he supports groups that help veterans, various kinds of groups. He will offer his services to MC events, raising money for various causes related to our veterans. It is just heartwarming to know. So he's just an all-around engaged, wonderful Texas patriot and very popular talk show host. Welcome to the show, Mark Davis.
Debbie, thank you. Wow. I'm honored. It is great to be here on the Debbie Georgiato Show.
Well, you can see why we don't call
not
it that
to rename
yet.
It yet, but someday, someday.
Someday, yeah. Okay, well, I told you ahead of time, there are so many topics we could hit, because the fun thing about running into you, wherever I see you, is that we could talk about many topics, and I know you're on top of the issue, as I usually am as well.
You bet.
So it's fun. I want to start, though, with the GOP presidential primary. And, you know, when we set this up, which I think was in January, I thought there'd be a lot of candidates to talk about. I thought we'd be running through, well, this. There are two candidates left in the GOP primary. We have Donald Trump, who's won rather decisively in Iowa and New Hampshire. And then Nikki Haley is staying in. And she, I will tell you, of Nikki Haley, let me go back to Iowa. Trump won 98 of 99 counties, which is unprecedented. And he won more votes there than ever had been acquired or accumulated by one candidate. And I actually thought after that, I don't know Nikki Haley personally, although she was here in Dallas this morning, I guess, but I didn't go to that event. But she's interesting because she's staying in. And even after New Hampshire, which was quite decisive for President Trump for his reelection campaign, she's staying in. So what do you think the forces are that are driving her to consider staying in?
It's easy to portray those forces as sinister if you're a huge Trump fan and you just wanted to clear the field so we can all gather together and start focusing on Biden, which, by the way, is something I would love to have happen. We see everything through the lens of our own political biases and what we want to have happen. So I want to give just a little bit of benefit of the doubt to the Haley base, however slightly it may be defined. There are people who on principle think that there ought to be a choice. This, I think, was the argument for Governor DeSantis staying in, perhaps through Super Tuesday. But he took a look at the shellacking he was likely to take in New Hampshire, that even a state that likes him, like South Carolina, is prone to. You know the reason they like DeSantis? It's a conservative state. Since it's a conservative state, Trump's going to dominate there as well. And Nikki Haley will not do well. She could have finished third in her own state. More on how she'll do there in a minute. But the overall principle of let's let people maintain their campaigns until Super Tuesday is a dozen or more states, there's a certain logic that says, look, surely that date will finish it for, we'll have everything will be set in concrete by Super Tuesday. So why not wait? That logic appears to be, we don't have that kind of time. We have a country to save, a Biden or somebody to beat, and we are wasting time, spinning our wheels, wasted time, wasted money, the donor class, don't get me started on the donor class. We should right now, be able to go ahead and aim all of our metaphoric fire at the presidency that we're trying to end. As it is, it looks like we're going to be treated to another 5 or 6 weeks of a seemingly needless Nikki Haley candidacy.
So to play the devil's advocate, which I sometimes do, I actually say my sense is that even the Nikki Haley people can see this potential path to emerging successfully on after Super Tuesday is a slim likelihood. But I will say also there's a lot of talk on the Republican side about, number one, there are people who are never Trumpers, and what portion of the Republican voting base is that? And there are people who say, that whatever the feeling people generally have, because there is a, because it was a Supreme Court decision, Roe versus Wade, the abortion issues for some people is apparently a very hard issue. Is the party helped by having a woman stay in who is a little more understanding maybe in those issues? Or is it just, I'm playing devil's advocate because I share this sense, I think common sense tells you that Trump is going to win this primary, and hands down. But I think there are people who worry about whether Trump can actually win against Biden in the fall. So they think, is Nikki staying in longer going to somehow help? Any argument?
Well, a couple of things. It is certainly arguable that the people who want a Trump alternative deserve a voice. Congratulations to her out of a field that contained more than 10 people. I've been saying for months, at some point we're going to get down to two candidates. One of them will be named Donald Trump and the other one will not. Well, she was, look at this. The last man standing was a woman. Good for her. All glory and honor to her for making it this far. But if there were more globalist, elitist, somewhat softer on being pro-life, establishment-friendly Republicans, then she might have won New Hampshire. Or she might have come in within 20 points or 10 points of Trump in Iowa. She didn't. If there was enough of the Republican Party that was her flavor, she wouldn't be about to be throttled in her own home state. It is what it is. So the question then becomes, in view of what it is, what do we do? It's hard to look at somebody and say, you get out, we're done with you, when so few people have voted, especially in little states with a fairly sparse population. As far as nothing is more important to me than winning in November. And it's easy to be tantalized by the polls that show her doing pretty well versus Biden, maybe even better than Trump would versus Biden. So the thing is, though, that's a statistic from a poll a year out. You've got to deal with what you want. What do you want to have prevail? Governor DeSantis had an argument that said, look, I'm going to bring you back Trump policies. I'm not about to turn 80 and I can serve two terms. And they still didn't want him. So clearly there is a specific desire for Trump, not just because of the return of the policies, but because reelecting Donald Trump, his hand on the Bible, January 20th, 2025, is a massive kick in the gut to every establishment, weasel, prosecutor, DA, tormentor, news anchor, state election official who tried to knock him off the ballot. It is a hell no. It's a massive hell no to those people saying, we're not going to let you tell us who we can vote for.
Amen to that. And I just think what you heard in this room, we if sometimes people clap, and it's not all that often during the show, that is uproarious during the show. But I think there's so much of that. And I also just think on DeSantis getting out, it was statesmanlike. His speech was statesmanlike, and he carved out the potential that in the future, you know, 4 years from now, he can run. I don't know if he will, but he's got a lot of great things that happened in Florida. And people, if they saw him as something gnawing away at Trump and costing money and taking time, he would have hurt himself. It wasn't just statesmanlike, it was also just shrewd to recognize now's the time out. I can run again in 4 years. And I think the longer Nikki Haley stays in, whatever reason people think they like her, she's saying, I don't care what the people want. I don't care what they think. I want power. And the longer she stays in, she diminishes her future potential.
I think she does. The Chris Christie campaign existed only for Trump hatred.
Yes.
Haley doesn't hate Trump, but she sure loves her some Nikki Haley. And listen, there's a certain amount of ego. Yeah, listen, Trump fans, we can't talk about anybody else's ego, right? I mean, to be fair, there's a certain amount of self-regard in everybody running for everything. When you're out there for Democratic committee woman, part of your argument is
RNC. Okay.
Roll back the tape.
Yeah, roll back RNC, the tape.
I'm sorry. Talking about Nikki makes me think about Democrats. Dodge that one. When you're out running for RNC committee woman, part of it is telling everybody what your attributes are, saying essentially, yes. Hey, dig me. I'm pretty good at this. You might want to vote for me. There's a part of that in running for everything. So it's okay if she says, look, there are things I offer. I want to tell you what I offer. But if it appears, A, that there is not a sufficient marketplace for it, and B, that your continued running, this isn't like deciding to stay in at Christmas. We're underway here. We do have a country to save and a Biden to beat. Her continued stick-to-itiveness in this campaign may well be distracting enough in terms of donors and energy that it makes it harder to win in November, and anything that makes it harder to win in November is bad.
On top of that, I want to say, I think the condition of our country, where we are in 2024, how much damage Biden has done to this country, and behind the scenes, Obama has done to this country, orchestrating the Biden administration, people are beyond, people who have their head on straight are beyond outraged about border policy, military policy, surrendering our sovereignty to the World Health Organization. You can list 25 issues. People are outraged, and what is needed more than anything is coalescing on the Republican side. Just think of the value Nikki Haley could add if she began to say, you know what, I'm going to get out, and I'm going to tell you, this is Trump's time. I might be back. This is Trump's time. And let me start talking to women voters, because that's a field of people that supposedly Trump may have a problem with. I don't think as much as he used to, as some people say, but that's the benefit you could do. You could send the signal, I care about America more than me. I'm going to try to help get Trump get elected, and women need to hear from me.
I think we'll see that. It'll be March 6th. It'll be the day after Super Tuesday. I think we will get there. We'll all feel better. We will have blown a month on a needless mano a mano between Trump and Haley. But it's fascinating you talk about women and the supposed thing. We all know the storyline that, you know, we need somebody who appeals to women, and Nikki Haley appeals more to women, not conservative women. She doesn't.
Correct.
She appeals to moderate men, moderate women. Nothing is about race and sex anymore, really. Nothing. When the left comes in and says, you know, we need more women on the Supreme Court. Great. How about a constitutionalist conservative? Oh no, can't have that.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about politics now, which is good. I'd rather have things be about politics than about the pigment or the plumbing, as I say. We shouldn't care about race or sex. We care about what's in your head, what's in your heart, what's in your spine. And so ultimately, I think women like secure borders. I think women like to have porn removed from school library shelves. I think women like a pro-business economy. Silly me.
So you're right. Absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting too. I'm not harping on Nikki Haley so much. She's the only one left, and this show is going to be all about all the candidates.
Lucky her.
But I will say, when you are going to run, you recognize in your own state where you were governor, both U.S. senators.
Yes.
And
the
incumbent governor,
yes,
are backing Trump. They're telling you you're not appealing to the Republican base at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and the old whole notion of, well, you know, these polls that supposedly say that Nikki Haley might do a little better against Biden. First of all, I think they're garbage, but the poll itself. But on top of that, so fix that. Fix that poll. Okay, it's really interesting. I'll tell you one more thing. There was an interesting letter written by Haley's campaign manager.
Oh, is this
Betsy?
The one where they talk about strategy moving forward?
Yes.
Oh, please share.
Betsy Ankeny, her name is Betsy Ankeny's campaign, mm-hmm, about Nikki Haley campaign, was saying the basic goal is they run through the upcoming primaries and how many of them are open primaries so the Democrats can cross over and vote for her.
Exactly.
Their strategy is, we know the Republicans hate us,
yes,
but maybe we'll move forward and get Democrats.
And one of the states they talk about is Texas, where we stupidly have open primaries as well. We've got primaries should be where Republicans figure out who our standard bearer is and Democrats butt out of it.
Yes.
And the converse is true. I don't need a bunch of us in this room going around messing around in the Democrat primaries either.
Yep. And I talked to our state GOP chair, Matt Rinaldi, and I saw him at some event in Houston like a few weeks ago. And I was saying to him, you know, do you need a legislative change to force the issue of only Republicans voting in Republican primaries? Because someone at this event, we spoke together, and someone was telling me this ahead of time, said, oh no, the party can do it themselves.
Right.
And Matt said, no. He said, you have to have legislature force the
really?
Issue by having vote register by party.
Well, it's on the ballot in November, but it's just one of those non-binding, hey, Republicans, what do you think about X, Y, and Z? It's a ballot proposition. I think it'll pass overwhelmingly, but
yes,
that is interesting. This doesn't seem like something that we ought to have lawmakers in Austin messing around
with.
It seems like something
that
a party ought to just be able to do.
Yeah, all I can say is I think the part, I would love to see the backbone in the legislature saying, from now on, we're going to register by party, and you can register to be independent or nothing, but then you can't vote. You can only vote in the primary and the party you registered in.
I wonder how Speaker Dade Phelan would feel about that.
He knows
a little something about needing Democrat help.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. So I guess on the GOP presidential thing, I want to do one quick just summary of data, which I thought was amazing. The turnout record in New Hampshire was more than 300,000, broke a record. Turnout, and that's just people, that's just energy. And the number of votes that Trump got in New Hampshire broke the record previously held by
Reagan?
Bernie Sanders.
It's tremendous. Tremendous.
I know.
So, it had to be recent, right, with population growth.
Anyway, it was a beautiful thing. It was really, you know, and the people are just trying to say, and I want to say a few things about Trump before. We're going to talk about Kerry Lake recorded, and I have that whole thing ready. Can't wait. And the Governor Abbott declared a declaration of the invasion of the border. But before we get to Kerry Lake, I think there is a... I try to say this about Trump a lot. I said in a speech last night or 2 nights ago, I actually think that the Trump energy that he brought to the country when he ran in 2015 and 2016, and he began the phrase MAGA, he began the America First thing, what he did was open the eyes of many Americans, many of whom really weren't interested in voting, and many of whom, they heard him begin to talk about, why isn't the left enforcing a southern border? Why does the left denigrate American history? Well, and he ran through some issues. He woke Americans up to the idea that America is unique and extraordinary and great, and the left has been surreptitiously and subtly tearing it down for decades. And it made people relearn or remember again America's greatness. And this is why I think long after Trump and whatever happens this year, long after Trump, the America First or MAGA mindset will continue because people have been awakened to the left's destruction of America and what America is supposed to be, and that the Republican Party is the only one that stands for it. What do you think about that?
And it's done, everything you've said is right, and it's also done something else. It hasn't simply shone light on Democrat views in a Trumpian way that nobody else could do as effectively. It has also wrestled a certain ethic in a different direction in the Republican side. Not so very long ago, Republicans were the people looking for places around the world to exert America's military influence for a better and safer world. And even pre-9/11, we were the folks who said, you know, not that everybody wanted to be the world's policeman, but if there was a trouble spot, you know, doggone it, if it met a certain bar of American significance, we were the ones who were going to get involved. Now, in the whole Ukraine thing, the Democrats have found a war they can actually like, and the Republicans and the conservatives are the ones saying, no, whoa, wait a minute, we got to take care of America's borders before the Ukrainian border. We got to take care of our problems before we go looking for global trouble spots. And I think the Trump era has done that as well.
That's a beautiful thing that was. Honest to goodness, and Trump bringing that out, because for a long time, the Republicans, and rightly so, were kind of seen as at least pro-military, a strong military, and to have a strong military, because in the Reagan notion of, because you have strength, peace through strength. Mm-hmm. And that's what we say, yeah, that's a great thing. But the military intentions and military aggressiveness that had crept into the lore of being Republican, that was a beautiful thing that Trump brought that out. And people said, yeah, we don't actually need to send our precious young soldiers to all these places where, you know, we can't impact the outcome long term anyway. You know, we can maybe... So anyway, I do think on the MAGA, or maybe America First is a more palatable way to say it. But that mindset, it was a rejuvenation of patriotism, I think will go on. And it causes, which is what I really would like other Republican candidates to say, you know, yeah, I'm America First all the way. In fact, they will. You do have congressional candidates. I'm a MAGA guy. I'm an America First guy. I love that. Love that.
It is a way. It has been such a commanding view. I believe that what you just described and what we've been talking about now constitutes easily 70, if not 75% of the entire Republican Party. Perhaps soon to be more. And that's why Nikki Haley's having such a tough time. And that's why Chris Christie couldn't get traction. And that's why, you know, even Kevin McCarthy wasn't conservative enough, and he's pretty darn conservative. And that's why Dade Phelan is so reviled here in Texas. It is because we have a spine. Donald Trump brought a spine back to the Republican Party that we haven't seen since Reagan. Ever since Reagan,
thank you.
Okay. Ever since Reagan, we have begged people for certain things from conservatives, and everybody would talk a good game on the campaign trail, promise this, and then they'd get into office and spend all their time wringing their hands about, oh, why we can't really do everything I talked about. Trump promised things and delivered them.
As much as he could, given the endless hassle we won't go down those hassles. Okay, I do want to turn to then Kerry Lake. First of all, I don't know you've had the opportunity to interview her, but she's extraordinary.
On a couple of occasions, she is a force of nature. She's fantastic.
Force of nature. She is, as she says at one thing, I'm Trump in heels or Trump in a skirt. I mean, she has this.
There's a visual. Is that a good thing? I don't know.
Sorry. erase that one. Okay. Yeah. But in any case, you know, she is a force of nature. She's because she had experience in the media, she's very articulate, and she can think on her feet, shift, pivot to what the question is. Been done a great job. So she, you don't have to agree. I believe she won the election for governor. I think it was stolen from her. Yep. And then you have her now running for Senate. And so the recent thing, probably everyone in this room, because you're all such wonderful patriots, you already know this, but the Carrie Lake had a conversation in 2023. Mm-hmm. I never forgot when in 2023.
March? Yes.
So wow.
She was still smarting from what I agree with you is the season of disputed elections. And the GOP chair had this mysterious call. I'll let you go ahead and finish the rest of the story.
Yeah.
But it was March, and she was still smarting from the loss that she didn't think was a loss. And she was toying with the idea of a Senate run against independent Kristen Sinema. And a whole lot of people did not want her to run. So
the state party chair, Jeff DeWitt, had a conversation with her, and apparently unbeknownst to him was being recorded. And so it just got released a couple days ago. And, you know, we'll talk about who released it, but it got released, and I have a little clip. And you know what, Emilio, you have that ready, right? I want to play this. I might have sent you too long of a clip, so watch me to high sign to cut some of it off. But the short story was, she, Carrie Lake, had a conversation with Arizona GOP chair, and it was being recorded. And essentially, he's trying to buy her off. Give her money, whatever you want. Just don't run for Senate.
As you hear this, just literally 30 seconds of Senate, I've heard her tell the story now. She's at home, and this guy calls her. And it's like, I'm right around the corner. We need to have a conversation. She said, okay, let's have a conversation. No, it has to be in person. Oh, I need to come to the house. There's some things I need to tell you that just need to be face to face. And they've been friends for a while. So she went, okay. But she was sufficiently creeped out that she mic'd herself.
God bless her. God bless her for doing this. We'll talk about that, what the impact will be in the future. But anyway, so she records this conversation. Why don't we just play it? Because I want to talk about who the people back east were, too, who is pushing this guy. Can we go ahead, please?
I'm assuming this is our friend.
This is back east. There are very powerful people that want to keep you out.
They do.
But they're willing to put their money where their mouth is in a big way. So, this conversation never happened.
This is crazy, though. They should want me. I'm a great candidate. People love me. These people are corrupt.
Well, maybe you're right.
They are right. They are corrupt.
Maybe. This is a wrap. Don't go. Do me a favor, though. I'll get myself in trouble. If you say no, that's just fine. It's your choice. Don't tell people.
They're going to try to have me murdered.
I wouldn't doubt that either. Today's world, man. If that stuff that came out last week is right about the cartel stuff, man. They say the cartel's operating in 50 states right now. Like all 50, you know? So.
So what's going on? Who is it? What?
Forget the who. Let me just tell you the what. Let's just say there are people calling around saying, gosh, no, they can't repeat this. Never repeat this. If you say no, don't. Because I got offered to buy out. Because then we lose our ability to get things done in the future.
Here's my problem. Rather than just say, let's work with her, she's a great candidate, because they don't own me, and it pisses me off.
Yeah, I said it's about ownership.
It's about control.
I don't know if it's about control. It's about being on the team. I guess that's, you know what I mean?
They want to be on the team.
They want you to be on their team. But just team, you know?
But if they're pushing a globalist agenda, I can't do that. So what do they want? What do they want me to do?
They want you to stay opportunist.
Well, we can cut it off here. I guess probably a little, yeah.
Please, can we all go grab a shower? That is so smarmy and so awful.
It's cringy.
And we all have known that it happens all the time. Now there's tape.
Well, now what I want to ask you about, so I didn't know it was March, and so this is nearly a year ago, but this tape sat around. She had this recording. This is was the Arizona GOP chair. He's now resigned because of this tape, and we'll get to him in a minute. But that is the most amazing. What she's essentially being told is people back east, so he doesn't, you know, it's obviously Washington, D.C. I don't think it's, you know, Florida. But anyway, Washington, D.C., they basically want to pay you to stay up.
Yes.
He asked her, what will it take? What will it take? And so, number one, I thought she obviously knows, she's the one knowing that she's doing the recording, but she's able to get a lot of points in them. I'm a great candidate. Why wouldn't they want me? So let me just start with that. What do you think? I mean, you can speculate away, but what do you think? Why is it the GOP would want to force her out of a Senate race?
Well, we talked about the donor class a moment ago, because the donor class hates Trump. The donor class is moderate. The donor class is globalist. The donor class is elitist. Everything that she is not. She is a nightmare, just as Trump was a nightmare to all of these go along to get along John McCain, Paul Ryan, Squish, Casper Milk Toast Republicans. Their day is coming to an end, and they are desperate to sideline or prosecute or financially ruin any candidate that is about to hijack the party into the hands of real conservatives.
Agreed. But this donor class, though, there's a gentleman who went on Bannon, I think, last night, and he was talking about, he does not have firsthand knowledge, but they were getting at the point, who is this guy referring to? Who is back east?
Yeah.
Saying, a lot of money, stay out, we'll give you, name your price, put your, and he said, I think it's people surrounding Mitch McConnell.
I don't know. It's easy for us to find, far east, is that far enough east? Is Kentucky, I don't know. I probably smell more of a donor cartel that is somewhere Washington-based or New York-based, perhaps with is Mitch interested in fewer annoyances from Trump-like candidates? Yes.
Sure.
So he's probably, I don't know if his hands are dirty on this, but he probably would approve of any legal effort to keep the GOP a little more moderate.
He would, and I'm not particularly accusing Mitch McConnell. This is one person whose name was discussed on Bannon's show. But I will say about this, the Republican base that so loves Trump, and they love his, his kind of raw Americanism. He's not a polished statesman-like candidate. I mean, he is in what he stands for, but he's just kind of a regular guy. He brought out Joe Lunchpail to say, yeah, that guy I like. Mm-hmm. These ruling elite, whoever they are, big donor class people, they see him as an annoyance, as an interference with their determined future, their determination to keep kind of control of the government in their hands. Because when Trump comes in, he doesn't listen to them. And they know this. And when a Carrie Lake kind of person gets in the Senate, they don't listen to him. They do what they think is right, which used to be what we thought all politicians did. But it's whoever is behind it, it is really a window on how determined people are to stop the America First agenda from having voice in Washington.
And this is what's behind the continuing fantasy of Nikki Haley's chances. They don't mathematically exist, but what does mathematically exist is a ton of money, an amount of dollars of people who want her to stay in so that she can wound Trump. Some of the logic behind that, again, everything comes back to Nikki Haley, but like you say, last man standing is a woman, there she is. Rather than a large field, she's going to get all this negative attention from people who are ready to move on, is that they're waiting for him to die or be convicted of something or for an asteroid to strike the Earth. It's like, well, let's keep her in because we might need her. You never can tell what might happen. And if something does happen that knocks him off the pedestal, there she will be. Nothing's going to happen. Nothing is going to happen.
Oh, and if Trump is convicted,
he wins 40 states.
Correct. It'll increase the odds of
him
winning.
He'll win from jail. Right. It'll be a red tie on top of an orange jumpsuit.
Exactly. He will. And the thing is, they know that. And this is what I was going to get around to is, when is it finally going to dawn on the donor class, the big establishment class, the uniparty, that Trump is what the people want? And begin to start think, okay, how can we work with this? Instead of just fighting him and hoping they can kill him or lock him up or, send him to Mars, what are we going to do if he's in, and begin to work with him? Because they're still thinking somehow we can keep him out. And if I were in their shoes, which I would never be and never have been, but if I were, I'd be thinking, okay, how are we going to make some inroads in connecting? Because they would rather just... They're still focused on knocking him out.
Well, you're right. And the reason this is likely to stay the same for a good while, that you can beat him over the head with actual election results, and the donor class likes to feel that it's in control. Look at the donor mindset. We're going to give X amount of money to certain candidates, and we're going to hope that they are people who are pliable enough that we can bend them and shape them, hope that they are malleable enough. Trump will never fall victim to that. The Carrie Lakes of the world, the candidates like Vivek, God love him, he was interesting for 10 minutes, are the kind of folks who, well, longer than that, guy, he has a future. Those kinds of candidates the donor class hates, because the donor class, if I've got a lot of money, I'm going to find somebody who I love, a candidate I know I love already, give it to him and say, God bless you, go do what I already know you want to do. The donor class finds candidates not just that it supports, but that it thinks it can control.
Exactly. Exactly what I want to get to. And this is, there's no big cash, pile of cash behind either DeSantis of their own earning, DeSantis or Nikki Haley. So the donor class is able to donate them and control them. Yep. That is sadly part of the problem. And it's why neither of them, they can't stray too far from what the donor class wants. But getting around to some things that Biden has done that I think even wealthy people should care about, even big donor people, the weaponization of the Department of Justice against the January 6 people, yep, against political enemies, this is destruction of America level stuff. We don't have a rule of law in our country. We have, if you are a Trump supporter and you were peacefully standing on the mall in Washington on January 6, you're facing prison time.
Yep.
Yeah, facing prison time over doing nothing, exercising your right to protest what I think was an obviously stolen election. Mm-hmm. People even of great wealth should care about that.
Conservative parents showing up at a school board, speaking a couple of seconds over time, are instantly domestic terrorists. They're seeking to get porn removed from school shelves, which I mentioned before. These people are now the new insurgents. The recent notion that the Treasury Department was trying to give a thumbs up to signaling to certain banking apps and banking software, the notion of being able to telegraph whether people's money was going to anything that spoke of,
yes,
MAGA or anything that spoke of Bass Pro or Cabela's. What? Sporting goods are
politicized? My favorite places, yeah.
Not in my America. But they know that they're just, that's why there is so much suspicion and so much conspiratorial cynicism, because people sense that the things we used to be able to rely on, a Justice Department that shoots straight, an FBI that just tries to follow the law, courts that just call balls and strikes, those days are gone and we need them back.
We need them back. And on that subject of the Department of Homeland Security, that all by itself, they were the ones that actually with a straight face and somehow thought it would fly with the American people, we're going to create the disinformation board. Mm-hmm. Because thank goodness we have someone here who can tell you what truth is. It was so.
And who better to trust?
Yeah, but you know, it was so parallel to George Orwell's Ministry of Truth.
Yes.
Are you thinking, did someone inside not say this? Hey, wait a minute, people are going to recognize what we're doing. Mm-hmm. But these people thought they're so far into their power. And the left, they thought people like this. We're just going to tell them what's true.
They have been able to, one of the reasons they're so energized at something that's so preposterous and literally Orwellian, as you say, is they've gotten away with it in a lot of ways. That if you have a certain view about the 2020 election, you're not just having a discordant view. You are spreading election lies. It is disinformation.
Yes.
If you have a certain view that God made actually two genders, that this is not just a disagreement you have with somebody who thinks there are 25, you are the hater. The left has managed to categorize its opponents not just as people they disagree with, but bad people, insurrectionists, insurgents, and liars. So the force of a Trump presidency tries to wrestle that back.
It sure does. And on that subject of wrestling those things back, the whole agenda of LGBTQ, et cetera, was making a lot of headway until they got to the point about the transgenderism and the whole notion that there is, in the world of the left-wing presentation, you know, nearly half of us are born in the wrong body. Gender you can choose. Gender ideology is science, just like biology. And they tried to make it into something. And that was one of those wake-up moments, I think, when parents finally realized. Talk about wake-up moms. If you say we're the party that is not going to let your kindergarten teacher tell your little boy to come home and say, I think I'm a girl, they want those real touch your heart issues. The transgender thing woke a lot of people up to recognize not just that the left is crazy, but that it's an agenda, that you're being manipulated. They began to re-examine more and more things the left had been selling.
Completely right. If Democrats have ideas like open borders or high taxes, those are bad policies. When the left is coming at you and telling and say that if you have a 10-year-old girl who thinks she's a boy, or a 16-year-old girl who thinks she's a boy, or a 12-year-old boy who thinks he's a girl, that they're healthy body parts should be ripped from them in furtherance of that fantasy. That is the mutilation of children. And that's not just a no, that's a hell no for 90% of America.
Right, right. And I really... Talk about something Nikki Haley could make huge, and not just Nikki Haley, but many people on the conservative side, the connecting of dots of this is the Democrat Party doing this. This is not Republican policy. We don't support child mutilation. We don't support teachers propagandizing your small children and lying to them about their identity and lying to them about their family. Those kind of, that kind of dot connecting would do a lot to wake people up. And people on the ground who want to be activists, it's one great thing to do, to push that. Okay, I want, do want to turn to the Governor Abbott thing. And if we have time before we turn to the Q&A part, I want to mention, do you ever read Babylon Bee?
All the time.
Okay, so, Babylon
Bee. You know what's great? One of the great satire sites. They literally have had things that they put up a couple of years ago as satire that then became real news. People said, wait a minute, people said something that ridiculous? Absolutely. So anyway.
Okay, well, they had a list of proposed VP choices for Trump.
Oh, no.
I'm going to run through. Yeah.
Okay.
But if we get to that, on a serious note.
Well, we have to now.
We have to, yeah. The last thing was Governor Abbott did issue, I think 2 days now or 3 days ago, issued a statement, an actual declaration of an invasion at the border. And people, I heard people say, well, he already did that a few months ago. It wasn't the same thing. Mm-hmm. What he issued now was actually a giving power to the state of Texas as a state, because of the constitutional provision he included in his declaration that basically said, this is an invasion and we're now taking control of the border. And I was going to, okay, I have my Babylon Bee list, so I don't want to lose track of that. Yeah, it's very funny.
I won't forget.
Yeah, but anyway, this thing by Governor Abbott, what was so stellar about it is that he just said, you know, he ran through the list of grievances and basically said, I have declared an invasion under Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3. And I've been through these provisions. I don't have them in front of me again, but this is actually saying this is our constitutional authority. We're doing it. We're in charge of the border. And part of it was because, or I'll ask you why you think he did it right now, but one reason I think he did it right now is because you just had the Supreme Court say, actually, in the course of completing this litigation, going back to a federal appellate court, the Border Patrol people can and must be allowed by the state of Texas to come in and start cutting the border wire and actually removing the buoy barriers. I mean, it was saying basically, while this is being litigated in the courts, state of Texas, you've got to let the federal government destroy the border protection we've put in. And I think maybe that was the final straw that said, okay, we can't, all these other legal grounds. I actually have every single statement that Abbott put out over the time since Biden got in office, but this is taking control. So first of all, overall reaction, why didn't he do this sooner?
Here's how we got here. We have a conservative governor and a liberal president. Liberal president, not only, they're not ignoring the border. This is on purpose. This is willful
Correct.
Malfeasance. They want waves of illegal immigrants so they can be normalized, naturalized, and then ultimately energized for decades of Democrat voting. So people say, well, Biden hadn't got a border policy. Yes, he does, and this is it. So what's a state like Texas supposed to do? Just lie back and take it? Are we supposed to just say this is okay? Governor Abbott and other conservatives in Texas and around the country have said, I'll tell you what, if the feds won't do it, we'll do it. So that's where you get state involvement in protecting our own borders with DPS, with Texas State Guard, with a Texas wall. This embarrasses the leftist White House. So they said, we're not going to let you do this. So that's where you have the skirmish. But when it went to the Supreme Court, and thanks but no thanks to John Roberts and Amy Coney Barrett, I don't know what they're thinking, they actually said that the federal government can subvert the sovereign state of Texas in our attempt to protect our own state from an invasion. That's where you get Governor Greg Abbott, who I've never been prouder of, saying pound sand, we're defending our state.
Absolutely, he did. I will back up and tell you, just to, you know, because of people, because I want to play a clip in just a moment. We have a clip of this MSNBC host, Joy Reid, which, you know who that is, right?
I know well who it is.
Okay.
I know too.
Yeah, she's almost, okay. But Governor Abbott did try in January 2023. So he's, you know, this is, I believe, his first hand-delivered letter to, basically, he was saying to President Biden, you have to detain these people. You can't just let them come through and you know, run all over the state. And, you know, he's tried very, in fact, that's not, that was, I have him out of order, because it was one he wrote in November of 2022. The Constitution says you have to, I mean, he has been following the legal avenue he had available. He's been asserting himself. He's been arguing it. And then he had another one, July of 23. Basically, he's saying, he's arguing about the floating marine barriers. Mm-hmm. And all that, you know, he did take steps to try to say to Biden, our country's overrun, our border's overrun, our state is overrun. And so this was, you know, I will say there are plenty of people who were talking about 2 years ago, just do it now, because you could see, you're exactly right, Mark, you're exactly right. This policy of the Biden administration at the border is not because of lack of funds, lack of, you know, just kind of incompetence. It's an actual, the mission is to destroy
this
the border.
Is the point. You know what the Democrat ploy is now? You'll see Democrats saying, well, we've earmarked money for border security. But to do what? To finance way more Customs and Border Patrol officials whose sole job is to be travel agents, to stamp their documents, give them a cell phone, a couple of bucks, a blanket, and a plane ticket to the interior of America so that this entire thing can have the imprimatur of the official federal government. They are travel agents redirecting and guiding waves of immigrants into the interior of America rather than returning them to their homeland, which is what they should be doing.
Yes, I will tell you also, I'm going to really mention MSNBC because border is one of those issues. I think, you know, you were talking earlier about some issue, 90% of people are kind of on board. Most Americans do not want an open border.
Correct.
And it's not because they are mean people. I mean, they do recognize there are poor people in the world and we want to try to help them. We do. We bring in over a million every year legally. But they recognize it's fentanyl trafficking, sex trafficking, drug trafficking. I had a national security guy on my show saying over 10,000 single military age Chinese men with direct ties to CCP already made it over the southern border. I mean, this is people who mean us harm. And so you know, the situation is radical. I always think it has to be almost all Americans who want this stopped, who might think, well, I'm a really good liberal because I support whatever liberals like, but I don't like this border thing. But you're thinking, well, what is the way the left is going to defend what the Biden administration is doing, how they're going to attack Abbott, and they actually went after Chip Roy as well. So this is a clip from, Joy Reid, she's MSNBC.
See. Brace yourself.
Crazy person. Host. But let's play her clip.
And
hold on, wait, one second. Listen to the very beginning words. This is Joy Reid on the left. Listen to exactly the early words she says.
And very quickly, this massive resistance, it sounds like the old Southerners who said that we will resist integration by any means necessary, that Chip Roy language, how does that read inside of the Latino community?
I mean, It's very simple. Now, if you're the Republican Party, you're allegedly the party of laws and order, and you're essentially telling local authorities to break the law. Now, so I think once again, going into this image of, you know, who is the party of law and order and who is the party for democracy, I think that's where we all have to highlight the hypocrisy, regardless of the politics.
Okay, you guys, number one, ignoring that what they're describing there, the Constitution, which actually gave Governor Abbott the authority to do exactly what he did, ignoring that. But Joy Reid's kickoff statement was also echoed by Congressman Castro, where they're basically saying the reason that Texas is reacting so strongly and trying to enforce the border is because we're racist.
Well, of course
that is the point. It's racist
of
to enforce the border.
Strong
That's
borders makes you racist, must be because we hate brown people. It's never been racist. It's always behavioral. And it's kind of funny. I love how Joy asks the guest, how's this going over in the Latino community? The conservative Latino community loves it because it's not about race anymore. It is about the conservative Latinos, conservative whites, conservative blacks, conservative Asians, all like the same thing. Liberals of those various races, they all like the same thing. So the race baiting will be pervasive. We ain't getting rid of that anytime soon.
But it's all they have to defend themselves.
Yep.
I mean, you think about how else, what are you going to say when you're saying the president of your party won't enforce the southern border? And everyone knows data about fentanyl deaths, or they're just tragic, horrific fentanyl deaths, a whole bunch of other just deaths from sex trafficking and child trafficking and the horrors of all that involves. And you're trying to defend your president if you're a leftist. And so all you're left with is, well, they must be racist. It doesn't mean, I mean, it's just, it is so far removed from
reality. And
it's
also typical and longstanding, and it too has kind of succeeded. We have people, we have Republicans who are scared of speaking truth. This is one of the things that the aforementioned Vivek did with great skill. Vivek on climate and gender, every Republican should say those things. That man-made climate change is a fraud, and that the transgender movement is a cult. This is something, this is not just people with bad ideas, and other, there are all kinds of bad ideas. But people have been cowed into submission that if you really do say you shouldn't sexually mutilate your 12-year-old, that you are the problem, not the misguided parent or the evil doctor will do it. You are the problem. If you want strong borders, you are the problem. If you don't believe in affirmative action, you are the problem. It's all they've got. Surely this gravy train of lies will have to come to an end at some point. Maybe November would be good.
That may, it'd be great. It'd be a great time in November. Yeah. And I do, on that point, on a serious argument on the Republican side, I try to say, I say often in my speaking, which is, people say, well, demographics are destiny. I mean, the country's trending by whatever year it's going to be. We're going to have a majority, either a combination of black and Hispanic will outnumber the white Americans. And that'll be the day the Democrats take charge. And I just find that so utterly and ugly level racist.
Of course it is. Because it's true. Demographically, it's true.
It's irrelevant.
There'll be more black folk, more Hispanic folk. I don't fear that at all, because if we're on our game, a lot of those black and Hispanic folk will be as conservative as we are. So let's have at it and let the rodeo begin.
Have at it. And it's insulting to say to people, because the left's policies, they're over the cliff to socialism. They make misery. Everything they're doing is hurting America, open borders, everything they're doing, to say because the color of your skin, you might like all this garbage they're doing. It's insulting. I mean, our answers, our ideas, our policies, I'm not sure what's dinging. But anyway, if someone's phone is dinging.
It's somebody saying, hey, get to that Babylon Bee list of running mates.
Okay.
Give me two seconds, because it's funny. Carrie Lake and Greg Abbott this week find themselves climbing the list of Trump running mates because of things that have happened to them. And J.D. Vance is interesting. Tim Scott is interesting. But the folks at Babylon Bee have a somewhat more satirical view.
Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about the VP choice, because mm-hmm. I can actually see Carrie Lake. What people will want, I think, is someone they trust that will carry out the Trump agenda should they succeed in killing him.
Absolutely.
Or something happen to him. They don't want someone who will just be the opposite.
Subverted,
so we're getting
exactly.
ready for the microphone. We'll have audience questions in just a minute, and you try to keep your question to a minute and hold the microphone close because it has to go out live. Okay, so top choice for me for
yes.
Trump's running mate is Carrie Lake. What about you?
Oh, gosh. I like a lot of people. She would be great. Tim Scott, I think, would be great. J.D. Vance, I think, would be great. Lee Zeldin in New York, I think,
I
would
love
be
Lee
great.
Zeldin.
Yep.
Okay, what about the guy who is running for governor in North Carolina, that Mark Robertson?
Mark Robinson, the lieutenant governor, Mark yeah. Robinson, yes.
I love that
he
guy, and
awesome.
I kind of heard he's talking, they're talking. I mean,
another
I did hear.
Another lieutenant governor of color, Winsome Sears in Virginia. Whoops, though, not, love her, not a natural born American citizen.
Born, oh, she's not. Okay.
Which I guess you still have to be.
Okay. So here are Babylon Bee. What you're thinking here of question, Babylon Bee suggestions. One was Nikki Haley's husband.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, he serves this country and puts up with her.
Just to mess with her.
He's tough.
Yep. Okay. One is the Argentinian president, Javier Milei.
Just I would think change of the Constitution tomorrow for him. Yes.
Just next. Think of the hair.
Kidding, of course.
One was Taylor Swift. Expect multiple cutaways to show her in the audience.
That's exactly right. And first man, Travis Kelce. I don't know. Appealing.
Yeah. Well, that one was Voldemort. Oh, no.
We already have that.
Okay. I won't read all of them, but the last one was kind of funny. It was Hillary Clinton. So... I mean, really? Okay, so
hey, you know what?
He
because the Democrat Party, as desperate as it is, if it just can't be Biden and it can't be Kamala, and you can't give it to a white guy and Gavin Newsom, and I don't think, please God, let me be right about this, that Michelle Obama's interesting. Who else do you have?
Oh, I
Hillary
know.
Is tanned, rested, and ready.
So listen to their what they're saying about Babylon Bee about why he should choose Hillary.
Yeah.
So he can make her come to every Oval Office meeting. And then say, sorry, Hillary, you're not in this one. I mean, just to keep kicking around the balls.
God okay. bless these people. I love them.
Now I'll stop. Okay. So we love to take questions. Try to keep them a minute and talk right in the microphone. And there you go. Erica, one right here in the front. Please.
First, Mike Pompeo, great vice president. I would love to see Mike Pompeo.
A little too in love with Ukraine warfare.
We can change his mind on that.
I do love him on virtually every aspect.
So I got kind of two questions. What are your three favorite sound effects that you do? And then I am realizing the more I get involved in the Texas politics, how deeply dark it is on the Republican side. When almost every Republican legislator will vote for Dade Phelan as Speaker of the House, when I know one candidate here in Tarrant County has received 500,000, just short of that, in donations from him and claims to be a Republican, what do we do to change that? Because it is vast. There's only two or three that will stand up to him. But I want the sound effects.
Well, here you go. I'll leave folks to the actual show for that, because every once in a while when there's something about talking about something that's been injected into a certain debate or something that just seems to be like some red alert kind of alarm that seems to be going off in people's heads, I'll let people find that on the show or the podcast of the show. On your question about how in the world do we get to the point where there's so much Democrat subterfuge, The short and easy answer is we've allowed it, and the hard work and the heavy lifting is we have to have all eyes open, like yours are and like Debbie's are and like I hope mine are, and this is part of it. I know we keep coming back to the Trump effect, because in the go along to get along donor fed establishment flavored brand of being a Republican, all this just, well, this is the way it goes. This is just the way it goes. That's what people tell you about Speaker Phelan. It's just the way it goes. We can't have a conservative speaker in a conservative state, because you have to have it. You have to give Democrats committee chairmanships and things like this. You just have to, because the way we elect the speaker is there has to be a certain amount of Democrat. Well, no, it doesn't. I believe we can have a conservative speaker if we demand one. We haven't had enough people who demand one, and maybe that's something else that changes. We talk about everything changes in Washington, maybe in Austin. It's time for Texas to really be run like a red state.
Right. Yeah. Amen. Amen. Okay, another question? There you
go. Hi.
Hi.
Met you a couple years ago with Alan West.
Very cool.
Who I hope is our next Dallas GOP chair. Anyway, what is it going to take, in your estimation, for we the people to get our freedoms back? Because it is a we the people. So when are we going to wake up? I mean, I'm not talking about necessarily this room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly, because in this room, it's like, well, we understand what liberty is. We understand what freedom means. We understand what the founders intended. And so it's a very broad question and a superb question, because there are a couple of I'll give a couple of really succinct things I'll try to be as succinct as you want the questioners to be. First, we have to teach kids what liberty is. It all starts in the classroom. I remember I had a thing called civics. You know, way back at the Grover Cleveland administration when I was in school, we had a thing called civics. And I don't even remember it being particularly rah-rah flag-waving. It was just, hey, this is how America works. It thought well of the founders. It said, you know what, this country was founded on the basis of not just religious freedom, but all kinds of freedom and self-government. When we're graduating kids into college who don't appreciate that, and once they're in college, they grow to actually hate that, yep. And it's a surprise, and this has been the case for 30 or 40 years. So education is the first thing. Conservative media, just to be very self-serving about something that Debbie and I do, is a big part of our day. We need to do better at outreach, and we need to garner more audiences, and we need to use, it's kind of funny, it's easy to go, social media, and I understand that because it's poison, but it can be the way for us to make clear that by putting out messages in shows like Debbie does, and I hope that I do, and with candidates like Trump with broad appeal, or not everybody has to be Trump-like, but have to have broad appeal to make people realize that liberty is good, borders are good, parental rights are good, transgenderism is crazy, low taxes are good. In this coming election, a lot of it is because I hope that conservative ideas prevail, but there are some things that we're fighting for that aren't even conservative ideas. Strong borders is not conservative, it's common sense. A productive education is not conservative, it's just sensible. Street crime, to have safe streets, that's not something that just Republicans want. So all of those things, one of the reasons those things have gotten worse is we've had people from the president down to certain city halls who don't appreciate people's personal liberty, and it all starts with that. And so liberty and freedom seem like these broad, poetic concepts, and they are for a reason, but they're also tied directly to nuts and bolts policies that every Republican should stand for, because every once in a while, an honest Democrat will too.
There you go, right there.
What do you think about Governor Abbott, what he has done, what he hasn't done, and what he should have done?
His is three. His is, I mentioned this on the show this morning. I literally said that Governor Abbott, since he took the oath of office in January of 2015, since then, he's been a friend, and I've supported him. Fun fact, he and I born exactly the same day, November 13th, 1957. Him in Wichita Falls, wow. Me in San Antonio. There you go. So yeah, it's kind of, I was born at 4:30 in the morning. He was born in the afternoon. I tell him, respect your elders. Anyway, though, his journey has been an interesting one. The early book on Greg Abbott was Important Conservative Governor, and that was true. Then people found certain holes in his conservatism and like some things where they kind of wish he was more recently, shall we say, a little more DeSantis-like. And this is what gave you the righteous and appreciable and worthy candidacies of Don Huffines and Alan West, who challenged him from the right and made good points in doing so. But I remember I said, made a lot of people mad, I said, Abbott's going to win. He seems to be sufficiently conservative to satisfy a big majority of Texas voters. And that is indeed what happened. So as it seems right now, the appetite in the most recent election was to reward Governor Abbott because he has been not just good enough, but largely good enough with really only a couple of flaws. But to many, those are important flaws. With this thing today, and some of his questioners and some of his doubters have said, is he really a believer on the border? Is he really willing? I mean, Don Huffines told him to declare an invasion like every day. Right. I think Colonel West said to do the same thing. Governor Abbott has made conservatives thrilled with him today and this week because he has actually become more like his challengers from the right. And if that is something that can improve the way he runs the state and maybe put him on the Trump shortlist of VPs, God bless him. Because I'm never pro or anti anybody. Trump, DeSantis, Abbott, I'm not pro or anti people, I'm pro or anti policies. And anything that Governor Abbott does that is less conservative is going to be troubling to me. If Governor Abbott becomes more conservative, I'm going to be the first to applaud.
All right, thank you. And thank you for the questions. There may be a few more, but we're actually past time. And so I want to thank Mark Davis. This was a really fun conversation.
Thank you.
Thank our audience friend who suggested inviting Mark on the show. And thank you for joining me.
My pleasure. So proud of you. So proud of everything you've done in this media empire. How about this woman?
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
I mean, I got to tell you.
You're very kind. Thank you very much. I saved the best Babylon Bee suggestion for last. Donald Trump should appoint
here we go.
As vice president
yes.
himself.
Because, hey, there's enough of me.
I know.
That's right.
It's like, you know, I'm the only one. Okay, on a serious note, thank you for all that you do.
I love
that you get out in the community and you just do wonderful events to support veterans. You've been talking the game, serious Republican analysis for years and years and years, or conservative analysis. Thank you for that. It's just so fun to do this. We could have done 3 hours, but like you do every day. Isn't your show so 3 hours a day?
You know where to find me, 3 hours a day. It moves as quickly as this did. There you go.
Actually,
time flies when you're having fun.
At some point, you were substituting for someone, so you were doing 3 hours, hour in between.
Yeah, I was substituting for someone. His name was Rush Limbaugh.
I'm sorry, I wasn't sure that was right.
It was Rush. When I was at BAP, it was Rush, but then I filled in for all the other Salem hosts. So more recently, it's been a bunch of other shows, Dennis Prager, Larry Elder, God bless Larry. But for 3-4 years, I got to fill in for Rush, the honor of a lifetime. I miss him so much every day.
We all do. We all do. Mm-hmm. All I'm getting is you would do 6 hours a day sometimes talking. I mean, I do talk a lot, but I cannot.
You but fit more into this hour than I fit into three sometimes.
So well, that was something. Anyway, so just thank you so much for joining me today. And let's please, audience, thank our guests for coming here today. So we are past closing time. I thank you for tuning in to America Can We Talk. Again, urge you to check out our website, AmericaCanWeTalk.org. And read everything that's there. I'd love to have you communicate with me. You can email me through that website. I thank you for listening to America Can We Talk. I do this show to speak truth about America because America matters. And I will talk to you next time.
truth about America. Can you hear?